WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Ricky Jay describes himself as a sleight-of-hand artist and a scholar of the unusual. He's now mesmerizing audiences in New York at his sold-out off-Broadway show, which is directed by David Mamet. Ricky Jay appeared in David Mamet's film about con artists, House of Games. I spoke with Ricky Jay in 1987, after the publication of his book Learned Pigs and Fireproof Women, an encyclopedia of attractions without parallel, sword swallowers, daredevils, freaks, and other sensational acts like Mack Norton, the human aquarium, who swallowed live goldfish and frogs in his performances. Ricky Jay has perfected a few astounding acts of his own. He's in the Guinness Book of Records for throwing playing cards 190 feet at 90 miles per hour. Ricky Jay told me about one of the people in his book, John Cummings, a knife swallower who didn't rely on trickery, but actually swallowed knives whole.
I guess the most interesting thing about John Cummings is he was a sailor, an American sailor on some boats in Europe. And he no doubt witnessed the performance of a French magician who pretended to swallow knives in some drunken, boisterous aftermath. He decided that he could do anything this magician did and really swallowed these knives. He had a dinner of five or six knives, and then after his initial success, ran around having people gather all the cutlery in the ship until he had eventually swallowed every knife on the ship. And so he was a totally impromptu and an unprofessional sword swallower. But later, apparently, after consuming every potable in sight, he would repeat these odd bouts. And two or three other times in his career, he actually swallowed many, many knives.
And apparently, when they did the autopsy on him, they found about 14 knives embedded in his stomach.
Yeah, that's he actually once swallowed so many knives that he began this fairly visible emaciation in the weeks that followed his last knife-eating bout, and the autopsy did reveal these knives all in his stomach. He just swallowed case knives whole, you know, folding knives in cases and tableware cutlery, and eventually died from the lodging of one of the knives in his body.
Why are you interested in all these really eccentric acts?
Well, I should point out that you're the one who mentioned it. Although I did write about John Cummings, it was merely a footnote to other more professional acts. John Cummings is not the focal point of this book. I do have a section on swallowing acts, people who ate this odd assortment of things. I mean, sword swallowers being the most famous. I suppose I have a true fascination with unusual entertainment. As you mentioned, I've been known to do some fairly unusual things myself, and over the years I've compiled data and playbills and books on all of these odd performers.
I'm going to ask you about somebody else who's in your book, and this is Johnny Eck, who some of our listeners might also know as one of the actors in Freaks.
Okay, before you explain, let me tell the story before you explain who he was in Freaks, for those who don't know his name, because I find this literally the single most bizarre tale in the annals of conjuring. What happened was that in the 1930s and 40s, a magician named Raja Raboid decided he would do this variation of the standard sawing of a magician's assistant in half. And he thought it would be much more interesting if he borrowed a volunteer from the audience, because everybody assumes the magician's assistant is in cahoots, or that there are two of them and there are actually two people in this cabinet instead of one. And so he went into his shows and he asked someone in the audience to stand up. And instead of a woman, a man stood up in the audience. And this man, in full view of the audience, walked onto stage. And Raja Raboid placed him in this box, and his assistants brought out a saw, and they sawed the box in half and pushed the two halves aside, and everybody applauded, and then they pushed the two halves back together, and the man got up and started walking back to the audience. And as he took a few steps downstage, suddenly his body toppled over in half. Literally, the trunk started walking off the stage to the left, and the pair of pants, the waist and legs of the man, started walking off the stage to the right. And people in the audience were gasping and fainting and screaming as they actually watched the trunk move into the left part of the aisle and the pants move into the right part of the aisle. And the way he was able to accomplish this, even though I don't make a habit of exposing all these illusions, this is truly bizarre enough to talk about for your listeners. He had Johnny Eck, who was in Freaks and was only half a man. He stopped at the waist, actually a little lower than the waist, but the photographs always made it look like he was cut off right at the waist. And he, of course, was the half of the man that walked into the audience, you know, crawled into the audience using just his arms. And the other half was a midget with a pair of pants pulled up over his head. But the thing that made this such a remarkable story was that the original volunteer from the audience was Johnny Eck's twin brother, full-sized, completely normal twin brother. So I think that's what gave this remarkable verisimilitude and made people truly scream, is that they saw this man walk up. They switched him for the midget and Johnny Eck, and people just went wild.
Pretty remarkable. This is one of the acts that is mentioned in Ricky Jay's book, Learned Pigs and Fireproof Women, full of totally bizarre and astounding acts. Now, have you been to a lot of places where you can see acts like this in modern times? Have you been to freak shows, traveled with circuses, anything like that?
Well, I actually did briefly run a Carney 5-in-1 show.
You ran a freak show?
Yes, I actually did perform it. It seems like a strange job to have
winding
up
not
in a museum as a curator of rare books. But yeah, I did indeed. Yeah, it was a show that traveled along the East Coast. This was about 15 years ago, and it was a show that was in operation then. And we exhibited a number of attractions. The difference between a 5-in-1 and a 10-in-1 show are basically the number of attractions, 5-in-1 being smaller. 5 different shows under one roof. I should do the pitch for you.
Would you?
Showtime, Circus Time, See the Magician, The Fireman Appellator, The Girl with the Yellow Elastic Tissue, The Electrode Lady. Yes, The Electrode Lady. She and her sister were struck by lightning. Her sister died, but she lived to tell the tale. 20,000 volts of electricity through the young girl's body. The doctor said she lived because she was immune to the shock of electricity. See the monster child from Johannesburg, Sat Attica, the monster child with one head, two bodies, three arms, and four legs. You read about it in your leading periodicals. You read about it in the National Enquirer. Then see Adam and Eve, boy and girl, brother and sister, all in one of the world's three living Morphidites, which will expose itself not to be rude or vulgar, but to show you Mother Nature's curious mistakes. Showtime, Circus Time, let's go be going.
And did you write that yourself?
Oh, no, it's actually fascinating that almost anyone who has worked as a carny talker will do a variation of that speech. It's been handed down verbally, and the pronunciations like morphidite for hermaphrodite and curious for curious are pretty much the same way you'll hear them in most parts of the country. I mean, the problem being that these days you don't hear much of this at all. There are not too many shows like this in existence anymore.
My guest is sleight-of-hand artist and scholar of the unusual, Ricky Jay. More after this break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Ricky Jay.
Let's talk about how you first got interested in magic. Now, I think it was your grandfather who was
grandfather
a magician?
Was a well-known amateur magician in New York. He didn't do magic professionally, but in a way that was a great lesson because he was an amateur in the true sense of the word, a real lover of the art, and was a great influence on me. And he invented a lot of original magic and had things published during his lifetime. So I grew up not only with him, but with a chance to see other wonderful performers who very much influenced me as a kid.
I always think if you put a magician and a kid together, then the magician is going to pull quarters from the kid's nose, things like that, the standard magician tricks.
Yeah, that's the toughest image to overcome is that kind of. I've said somewhere that magic seems to me the only art form that's been shaped by amateurs instead of professionals. Because of that concept that most people have, they can't seem to tell the difference between their Uncle Harry, who takes a quarter out of your ear, and somebody who's worked 10 hours a day for their entire life to do, some really beautiful effect with a coin.
So the quarters out of the ear isn't the kind of magic that you were exposed to by
no,
your uncle
I was,
and your friends?
No, I was exposed to literally the best people in the world, many of whom are still alive. Sly Deeney, who's in his late 80s or 90 in New York. Di Vernon, who's 93 in California.
Would they show you the tricks, show you how they work?
Well, it's very interesting. There's kind of an unexpressed apprenticeship that one goes through. I mean, clearly I had access because of my grandfather at an early age, but I didn't talk very much. I watched and tried to pick up what I could. But as I got older, for instance, I moved to California some 12 or 13 years ago to be with Vernon, who, as I mentioned, is still there in 93 and most people think is the preeminent figure in sleight of hand. And he would never accept money for lessons, and he would always tell you he wasn't teaching you. But clearly he was. He was challenging you at every opportunity and making you think for yourself and inventing effects and even going beyond that. I mean, to the point of if you had invented something and you really were proud of it, he would kind of give you a smile, you know, to lead you to believe it wasn't very good and then go and tell somebody else who was young and really an upcoming young performer that you had just invented this wonderful effect. And then he would come back and tell you that the other guy had just invented a wonderful effect. I mean, he really played the role of almost a Zen master. And try to get people to think really well for themselves. So.
Did your parents ever, do you think, say to themselves, why did we bother assimilating and trying to be successful in business or whatever so that our son can run off and be a magician and join
I suppose if I were talking to them, they would have said something very much like that. But because that was clearly their attitude a long time ago, I haven't said a word to them for a good 20 years or so. So I wouldn't know.
Ricky Jay is my guest. Are there interesting swindles going on city streets today?
Yeah, sure. I mean, things. You know, one of the observations that I try to make in the book, and I don't spend a lot of time doing that. I mean, mostly I'm just presenting facts about people. But it does seem to me, and I mentioned in the introduction, that I believe people are swindled the same way now that they were in the Elizabethan times 400 years ago. They're fooled by the same things and they're delighted by the same things. Very little has changed. There are swindling and cheating techniques done with cards and dice that are absolutely explained in detail in books from the 1550s that are still being done now.
Things like three-card Monte?
Three-card Monte doesn't go back that far. That's a fairly recent origin. But the three-shell game, which is a version of thimble rigging, goes back to I've been trying to trace it back to the 17th century, and I haven't been able to, but I've certainly been able to trace it back to the very early 18th century. By 1714, there are clearly references to swindlers using a pea under a thimble. And that game has changed very, very little in the ensuing years.
Have you ever gone up to swindlers or con men and tried to beat them at their own game?
It's a very dangerous thing to do. It's a very bad thing to do. I think there's some people in this field who think that if they're magicians and know something about this, this is a great opportunity for them. One has to make the distinction that these people are, for the most part, criminals. And even though I have, like I say, this respect for what they do and some great feeling, you can be in a very bad situation if you see somebody playing three-card Monte on the street and want to go up and say, I know something about cards too. I know how to do this move and make the queen go into the middle when it doesn't look like it's there. So no, I don't do that. But I have some friends and have had friends for many years who are on that side of the fence and still maintain my connections with them. But I don't walk up to people in the midst of a game and point out the queen, even though I can do that.
Ricky Jay is currently performing off-Broadway in a sold-out show called Ricky Jay and His 52 Assistants. Those 52 assistants are a deck of cards. Our interview was recorded in 1987. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.